Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Good morning, everybody. This is Amuse News. This is your destination for food news and conversation. It is Friday, April 5th. It's Friday, and it's finally not raining here, so it's great. I'm looking forward to our conversation today. We're going to be talking with Christine Sykes-Lowe, who just launched a new podcast, and she's been traveling around going to different food shows and conferences and events. And I want to talk to her about kind of where the live, food as it relates to entertainment, where the live food and entertainment industries are going, which is pretty similar to the music world, I think, but there are probably some differences too. So we'll talk to Christine in a few minutes. But as usual, we want to start with a few quick things. As I mentioned, this is a podcast that, if you're listening, thank you for tuning in. If you're watching live, hello, happy Friday. I'm RJ, I'm the executive director of Heritage Radio Network, and part of this is really just trying to talk to people from around the food world, learn, and hopefully expand our horizons together. So. Here we are. I guess I wanted to start by just saying that this is a, interesting time to be starting something like this. We've been around for 15 years, and I'll talk a little bit more in depth in a few minutes about the 15th anniversary campaign that we're doing. But we are we're hoping to bring people closer to some of these cities and experiences that Christine has been experiencing. So we'll tie that all together in a minute. But first, let me just tell you a little bit about what's going on today. So the news, I'm going to bring you a few pieces of news. And if you see things there that you think we should be talking about, please let me know. Hit up Heritage Radio on social media. I wanted to talk about the Final Four because I'm a huge basketball fan, and it's the women's Final Four today and the men's Final Four tomorrow. So there are eight teams. There's some overlap this year, but I wanted to talk about this as it relates to food because, it's fun to have a Final Four and to think about who we think is going to win the games. But in this case, I want to talk about the cuisine of each of these areas because I wonder where people would fall with these Final Fours. So I'm going to go through the Final Four women's teams as well as the Final Four men's teams, talk a little bit about the cuisine. If you want to participate, hit us up on social media and let us know which of these, which in each category, men's and women's, you would choose if you were choosing one of these Final Four. And I'm going to give you my own editorial on sort of the cuisine of these areas. But you can expand or whatever, but let us know on social media. I think it'd be fun to get people to participate a little bit and let us know what you think. Okay. So women's Final Four, what we have is NC State, UConn, South Carolina, and Iowa. So I'm from Ohio. So I think I'm allowed to say what I want to about the Midwest, but I'll go Iowa last. Okay. NC State, of course, North Carolina is renowned for barbecue. And I hope everybody knows there's Eastern and Western. Eastern style is vinegar based. Western style is tomato based. I think they use different kinds of pork, but okay. So let's just say that NC State, we got barbecue. UConn in Connecticut, I guess there's really good pizza in some parts. There's seafood, there's lobster rolls. Apparently there's amazing ice cream. So you got that at UConn. South Carolina, which Christine and I are going to talk about. I just took my first trip to Charleston, and the food in Charleston is amazing. Shrimp and grits, fish, Frogmore stew, which I didn't have, but apparently is a seafood stew, oysters, barbecue, peaches, boiled peanuts, which I'm not a huge fan of, but apparently are well-known there, and pimento cheese, which I am a huge fan of, and I had a bunch in Charleston that I really liked. And lastly, in the women's, Iowa. So, like I said, I'm from Ohio. So, I, you know, it's mostly meat and potatoes in the Midwest. But Iowa is known for something called the original made right sandwich, which is ground meat topped with mustard, ketchup, onion, and pickles. And apparently this is like some kind of edible icon, and it's available throughout the state. I didn't really know about this, but also Iowa is known for corn, of course, and hot beef sandwiches, and I think some kind of ice cream. So if you were voting, let us know on HRN social. North Carolina, Connecticut, South Carolina, Iowa. What food are you taking? Okay, for the men's, we have NC State. So there's an overlap here. North Carolina barbecue. Purdue, which is in Indiana. Again, close to my past. Not a lot going on in the Midwest food-wise. Pork tenderloin sandwich. I think there's some fried chicken in Indiana, but I think it's just mostly meat and potatoes. Alabama is in the Final Four. So Alabama has a pretty wide range. Of course, there's barbecue there, but also fried green tomatoes, collard greens, smothered pork chops, fried chicken, and then probably some shrimp and grits crossover. And then you have UConn again, lobster roll, pizza, maybe ice cream. So let us know, men's and women's, where you all fall. If you like this, we'll do this again at some point. Another piece of news I wanted to point out, that we have a former intern, Sasha DuBose, who wrote a piece about cooking and relationships and healing in a piece for NYU's independent student newspaper, which is called the Washington Square News. Sasha talks about cooking and relationships, a breakup, and how food helps people heal and move on. It's really interesting. I'll put the link in the show notes. And just another way of showing that our interns are, you know, out there creating content, creating impact in the food world, and really cool to see. It was a really nice piece to read. There is something we've tried to do this year where we're trying to kind of highlight the work of BIPOC and LGBTQ plus artists in relation to this kind of monthly editorial theme. So each month we've chosen a different theme. We're organizing some podcast content around that, some art, some newsletters. My colleagues, Rachel and Taylor and others, have helped put this together. And our artist for this month created this really cool graphic about the idea of borders. So the idea of borders is the theme of the month. And the artist Salu, which I'm going to link to this in the show notes in case you want to check out the art. What Salu said about the art is that borders show the division between people and the importance of breaking down barriers to create a more united world. And the art piece that Salu created was aiming to showcase the beauty of unity and cooperation, highlighting the potential for a future where borders are no longer necessary. There's a bunch of episodes of HRN podcasts that kind of talk about borders in different ways, which I'm going to link to in the show notes as well. And in April, we're going to be talking a lot about borders. And then in May, we'll move on to the next theme with new art and really trying to highlight new artists. So hope you check that out. And if you don't subscribe to the newsletter, you can do so after you click on the link in the show notes. Okay. Last thing, I've been talking about our 15th anniversary campaign. As you know, we are getting closer to the end. Part of what we're doing to raise money to support our education programs, like the internship program you heard about yesterday from H and Taylor, and some of the fellowship programs that my colleague Frank and I are putting together. We are trying to bring people unique food and music experiences in various cities. So when you donate to HRN, you support our internship programs, and you can enter to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in the city of your choice. So today I'm going to talk about Charleston. I mentioned I just took my first trip there, and my guest, Christine, is a part-time Charleston resident, part-time Charlestonian maybe. I don't know, Christine, we'll have to clarify that. But we have some amazing experiences here in Charleston. The food is, I think, probably one of the best restaurants in Charleston, Fig. So dinner for two at Fig, one of the Southeast's top culinary destinations. From what I hear, I did not go there, but I've heard that it's one of the best meals you can have in Charleston. And the music is a ticket to the Spoleto Festival, which is basically a two-week festival that goes throughout Charleston's theaters, churches, outdoor spaces, and there's performances by musicians in all kinds of genres, jazz, choral, symphonic, but there's also theater, there's dance, there's opera, and it's really an arts festival that lasts for about 2 weeks. So if you donate to HRN, enter to win in Charleston, you can go to Fig, have dinner for two, and check out the Spoleto Festival. So that is the plug for today for the fundraiser. So Now I'm going to bring in Christine from the beautiful green room. Hey, Christine, how's it going?
Hi there, RJ. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. What do you have anything to say about Fig?
Fabulous. It's a meal to remember and definitely worth bidding on. And I know you're only plugging Charleston today, but I got to put a plug in for Asheville because we've got some good stuff on that one too. Chaipani, Badawala, and we got some tickets to a festival there that I think that you arranged as well.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I will go into more detail on that. Asheville, thank you for helping with that. It's really, really cool. And it's really cool, like, when we put this together, we reached out to a bunch of our board members and hosts and friends, and people came through and you know, donated a bunch of stuff to help us, which is awesome.
And Asheville's my hometown, so.
Okay. So hometown versus, but you do spend time in Charleston.
I do. It's kind of a dichotomy of mountains to see and love the low country. It's as you probably realize when you visit it, it's such a rich culture and food is just one major element of that.
Awesome. Today I'm like, one of the reasons I want to talk to you is that you launched a new show today, Feast in Harmony, and there's a bunch of episodes that came out. We'll talk about some of them, but I know you do work with your company called Feast in Harmony as a consultant and producer, and you do media and brand partnerships, culinary programming, activations, and all kinds of stuff. But you just got back from traveling around the country and on the high seas and various different events, and I think you're back now, maybe on solid ground for the first time in a while. But tell us about your recent travels and what you've been up to.
Yes, I think I'm just getting my land legs back, so good timing. It's been quite a march this past month. Launching Feast in Harmony has I've worked with Heritage Radio for almost a decade now in one way, shape, or form. The past few years, I have hosted HRN on tour, many episodes on that. And through that, I was able to explore getting into the festivals and just really digging into more of the arts and entertainment side of things. And this past month, I started out at Charleston Wine and Food, which I saw you down there. And we got to speak with Wisconsin Dairy and Sam Four, who just opened her brick and mortar a few months ago, Tuk Tuk Lex. And then on from there, traveled to Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. We had some great interviews there, particularly that I was very fond of was HRN's own Dana Cowan. She's going to be launching the Progressive Hedonist soon. So we got to catch up with her and Felicia Cocoten Ruiz, who is a healer, an indigenous healer. They had a panel together. So we dove in a little bit on that. Marshall Amps, which is worldwide known for literally amplifying musicians around the world, had an amazing showcase, probably 4 days long. And it was literally a carnival atmosphere that they reproduced, and people could sample incredible food and do games. But of course, incredible live music was a part of it as well. So really interesting talking to them and how they incorporated the two. And then I had a really interesting invitation to attend Luck Reunion, which is about located about 30 minutes outside of Austin on Luck Ranch, which is Willie Nelson's backyard.
Of course. God, it's so great. You're so lucky. Why didn't I go with you?
I think next time you need to.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Yeah, we need to get that going. But it was what's so wonderful about Luck Reunion. You know, we got to speak with Michelle Nichon, celebrated chef and pioneering advocate in the culinary world. John Mook, who is a new emerging artist. He's actually opening for the Black Keys on tour coming up. And Scott Marsh, who is one of the founders of Luck. And sitting down with them, we talked through the process about the origination of Luck and how it started off as almost the non-festival festival. Mm-hmm. It's very small. as festival standards go, no more than 3,000 people. However, the reason I was there was the night before, they have something called the potluck, which is an array of chefs that come in from all over the country, as well as local chefs. And they do a curated meal for nonprofit to kind of kick off the festival. And then intimate performance by Willie Nelson himself. So about 300 people for that event.
Wow.
So it's an interesting episode to listen to and to learn more about luck and potluck in general. And then after that, it keeps going. After that, I had a little bit of a break, but then off to Miami to set sail on Six Man. Six Man is a producer of festivals at sea, mostly music festivals. This time they were producing a wine, food, and spirits festival at sea called Chefs Making Waves. And it was remarkable. It was a floating food and wine festival. Everything that you would see at a food and wine festival, including curated dinners by the chefs every evening that guests can partake in, panels, and of course, HRN interviews, and demos, and all the wonderful things. And that kind of wrapped up the month. And it was very eye-opening to see something like that translated on a ship, as you can imagine. Yeah.
It's crazy. So, first of all, it's really cool. And you have 10 episodes that all came out today at the same time from these various events. And I got to sit with you on the first episode, Sam Four, which was really fascinating. Just listening to Sam talk about the evolution of kind of, you know, Sri Lankan and South Asian food in Kentucky. I mean, that was a really fascinating conversation. But you have these interviews from Charleston, from Austin, from the you know, Waves. Is Chefs Making Waves, is that like, is that format going to continue, do you think? Is that something that we'll see more of? Or is that something they're just trying? Or I just think it's like such an interesting thing, especially like bands do that too. You know, there's Jam Cruise and other cruises where it's like once you're out there, I think you don't really have anything else to do besides whatever the programming is.
Well, it was a stacked several day. It was a Monday through Friday cruise, and they had two excursions, one to Great Stirrup Cay and the other to Nassau. But there was definitely full programming on the sail days and the times in between that. And the answer to your question is yes. At the end of the cruise, they announced that they are setting sail again next, I believe it's next March again. So, or it could be pushed to May, but people can check that out at Chefs Making Waves.
Really, really cool. So in terms of this, like your work and this podcast, what are you learning so far through doing these? You know, you've done a ton of interviews just in the past like couple months. Is there anything you're like reflecting on in terms of what you've learned?
Yes. First of all, it was all incredibly fun. I love talking to people from all walks of life, but really digging in deeper to the personal level with some folks. For instance, Andrew Zimmern, he dove pretty deep into his recovery and addiction. One of my guests was actually using food as a form of therapy to come back from veteran-induced PTSD. There's a lot of different angles to it. I mean, of course, it's about food and fun and showing different aspects of entertainment and the arts and tourism. But it's also human and real, and it talks to people about real life things. The other thing I'd like to reflect on is just the generosity and openness and welcomeness everybody showed to me. I will say, if I'm going to be completely honest, and we are getting really real, the pace of it was a bit much. 10 episodes is a lot in a month. So probably going forward, I'm going to pace it out a little bit more. But it was almost too good to pass up. I mean, you can't say no to Willie Nelson, right? So, But it was fun and amazing. And I really look forward to how this, you know, evolves over time.
That's really cool. So I come from the music world, and it was interesting in 2021 and 2022 to see festivals and musicians kind of trying to figure out, you know, the way forward and in kind of in the middle of COVID or post COVID or however you interpret it. I don't think COVID is over, but we're kind of like treating it as if it's over, right? In some ways. What do you feel about these, like this kind of state of food festivals? Cause and just as an aside, I went to Charleston to go to the Charleston Wine and Food, which ended up the kind of main event got canceled the last 2 days because of these insane storms. So I didn't get to experience that, but maybe that's another piece is just climate and weather and how some of these like outdoor festivals are dealing with that. But what's happening with food festivals post kind of the first, I don't know, 4 years of COVID?
Well, just to touch first on your point about weather and the things that people have to dodge when they're in the live production industry, as you know, coming from a music background, I have, and having worked that myself as part of crews over many years, the way people have to bob and weave around so many situations is just deserves mad respect on every single level. My heart goes out to the folks in Charleston on the weather situation, because we've all been there. I've been in the middle of a flood during a production one time. So we want to put forth the best product, but sometimes, you know, Mother Nature does not cooperate. So we have to pivot. As far as COVID goes, I think that, of course, at first, when it first happened, it was entirely devastating to the industry. Everything was canceled, including live performances, music and food festivals, food festivals in general, you know, anything. There was a touch point handling food. There's all kinds of serve safe concerns. You know, it was just obliterated. So it was a rethink of how we're going to deal with this virus that really no one knew how to deal with. Fast forward, slowly reemerging, slowly starting, people started coming back out. I think in the beginning, you know, there were some requirements for, you know, attending festivals at the very beginning, showing your proof of vaccination. I know that I'm sure you can speak to, you know, music venues would do the same thing. You would, if you wanted to go see a band, you had to show your proof of vaccination. So slowly those kind of elements started coming into place. And now, as you mentioned in your intro, it's kind of business as usual. We're looking at, you know, you're still gathering in mass. People are cognizant that there are things out there, including COVID. And unfortunately, COVID is a way of life now. So it's, yeah. I think it's something you're aware of. And I think it's a personal thing if you want to wear a mask, if you're going to be around people. But overall, I think, you know, there's always going to be things like this out in the world. We're going to have to pivot around.
Are there any like new things being tried in terms of models or adjustments that people have made that are promising, like coming out of COVID, or things that you used to see that you don't see anymore, or business as usual in all the senses in terms of how people are kind of running these events?
I think, quite frankly, I think it is mostly business as usual from what I've seen. I think that, you know, sometimes there's an extra layer. If it's a particularly small event, they might still require a proof of vaccination or some kind of spacing. You know, just being a little bit more cognizant of areas and spacing, and certainly the indoor versus outdoor aspect. Mm-hmm. If you're outdoor, it's a little bit more of a no-brainer as far as risk and being able to spread out.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I think for some in the music industry, I think there were like a few things that, I guess, like being forced to innovate and being forced to pivot can lead to kind of like new models. I mean, I know so many like small independent venues had to figure out how to survive, you know, and that's hard to do. But I think you have to like change the model sometimes. And I wonder if like the huge food festivals, like I wonder if they will continue into the foreseeable future, or if they're all going to have to kind of change as weather and people's travel schedules and the economy and all that stuff shifts. I mean, I don't know. Does that change over time, or do people just try to like, you know, give the same experience as much as possible?
I think it just depends on the scenario. Of course, there's going to be factors in life that we really can't control or really predict. I think that the teams that produce large scale events, whether it's food or music or whatever it is, I think that they always have the foresight of trying to say, okay, well, if this scenario happens or that scenario happens, because I believe with COVID, it really was, you know, it was the scenario that no one could predict, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking at also, and not to be morbid, but just quite frankly real, you know, I mean, you hear of, you know, terrorist attacks at large scale festivals. You hear of different things of gathering en masse, which makes people more susceptible to violence. These are all things that are in the mind of the professionals that are producing these things. Of course, they want everyone to have a good time and to have fun and to experience and enjoy as much as possible, but not at the risk of safety. So they're always going to have some kind of thing in place. It just depends on, you know, who's producing it and what's going on. It's going to be really interesting through the years to see where this industry heads, for sure.
Yeah. And there's so much, there's so many like logistics, you know, it sounds obvious, but there's so many logistical considerations to pull off these huge festivals in a changing world. It's hard.
And to your point, you know, you mentioned with your background, with the smaller music venues, how it either put them out of business or came close to, right, during COVID. Same with restaurants, as we all know. And it was just a devastating thing to happen to our world. But the resiliency and innovativeness of people to pivot and to make it through it just astounds me. Absolutely astounds me daily.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. It's good to see that. Yeah, that is kind of the bright side of some of this stuff. Okay, Christine, what else are you looking forward to this year, and what else can we expect to see from you in terms of travels and whatever else you're up to?
Well, I am dabbling in possibly, it's not really official, but I might be doing some Kentucky Derby coverage, actually. Going down to Louisville, Kentucky, and talking to some folks down there. It's such a rich area in the way of obviously the entertainment with the Derby, but the bourbon country itself and the food scene down there is pretty hopping as well. And then plans to possibly attend Aspen, the Food Wine Classic in Aspen again. I've hosted that for 2 years in a row now for HRN on tour. So it will be really great to attend for the Feast in Harmony podcast and get some great interviews there.
That is great. Well, then thanks. And then, like I said, there are 10 episodes that people can listen to, and we'll be kind of, you know, promoting those over the next couple of weeks from all these different festivals. And it's pretty cool that you get to travel to all these awesome cities and talk to amazing chefs and other people in the food industry.
Well, I love it. And I thank you all for your part and working together with me to do this. And I can't wait to keep putting out some good content. And if folks would like to follow the latest and greatest, just follow me on Instagram at Feast in Harmony.
Awesome. Awesome. And before I let you go, I have to ask you, what was your last best meal or last best bite?
Oh, gosh, okay, that's really a hard one, man. I have to think hard on this one. On Chefs Making Waves, there was a dinner curated by Mark Murphy and Michael Simon. Mm-hmm. And I try to space myself on desserts, because if I let myself, I could completely, or the sweet tooth could completely overtake me. And so I'll just have a tiny bite of a dessert. If I really love it, then I'll finish it. But, you know, I try to pace myself. They served this butterscotch. It was almost like a creme brulee, but it wasn't. It was definitely thicker and it didn't have the hard top, but it had just enough of a caramel like top to it. It was like a butterscotch pudding with this amazing caramel top to it, and just a little bit of Malden sea salt, just enough salty and sweet. And you know, butterscotch has that kind of flavor mm-hmm. profile anyway. There were people at my table that were asking for seconds. It was just, wow. It was sublime. But you know, it's hard to narrow down. The food at Willie Nelson's Potluck was pretty amazing as well. So I'm blessed to be able to eat some of the best food from the best chefs in the world, and I'm forever thankful for that.
Yeah, that now I'm jealous, but thank you for sharing that.
What about you? What was your last favorite meal?
Oh wow. Let's see.
Last. Did you get those shrimp and grits in Charleston?
Yeah. Glass Onion. That's where. My wife loved the shrimp and grits there. That was like her favorite thing she ate in all of Charleston. We had so many great oysters at like several different places. I was at Roberta's last week with a couple of our colleagues and interns, and we were watching the recording of Meetin' 3 and meeting with a couple people. And I have to say, the Roberta's gem lettuce salad,
yes,
is like one of the best things I've. Like I can't, every time I go there, that's all I can eat. And it sounds boring, but it's like, it's really a pretty, it's a pretty unique thing. So,
Not boring. I've had that salad. It's pretty good. Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah. And they're like, their food is so good. It's known for pizza, but like all the appetizers we got were so good. So, you know, plug for Roberta's, which is not, you know,
yay, Roberta's. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for letting us record there. Awesome. Well, Christine, we look forward to hearing more from you, and thanks everybody for listening. If you haven't yet, check out Feast and Harmony, the podcast, and subscribe and follow and check out this podcast, Amuse News, wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be back on Tuesday morning, and Christine, thanks again for joining.
Thanks, guys.
Everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.